In the Moment is supported by the South Dakota Humanities Council, presenting the South Dakota Festival of Books, September 26th to 28th in Spearfish.
A new season of public information, education, and entertainment. From SDPB, today is Thursday, September 11th. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, we will preview a new season of On Call with the Prairie Doc. We'll talk with Dr. Jill Cruz about the value of a call-in medical show in an age of health information disruption. Then, SDPB's South Dakota Focus brings you a two-part investigation into the state of emergency medical services in South Dakota. Jackie Hendry explores the urgent lack of ambulance services in many of our small towns and rural regions, and she finds folks who are responding with community solutions. Plus, SDPB's Julie Overgaard has an in-depth update on how this station is looking to the future. That's coming later in the hour. We are broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the Moment. News is first.
Healthcare reporting on SDPB is supported by Monument Health.
You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. The first episode of On Call with the Prairie Doc airs tonight. You can catch it on SDPB TV and the Prairie Doc's Facebook and YouTube pages. There's also a companion radio show that airs right here on SDPB. Hear it on Sundays at 6 a.m. Central, 5 Mountain, and 1 p.m. Central and noon Mountain. Dr. Jill Cruz joined me to preview the medical show's latest season.
On Call with the Prairie Doc, we're going into our 24th season of what we say is health information that is based on science and built on trust. So we really want to get you good, non-biased, factual information about healthcare concerns that the viewer can call in with questions or send us an email or a message with what health questions they want. And we bring in local area experts to discuss various topics and answer what questions the viewer really cares about.
Tell us a little bit about what you have noticed is on people's minds right now. What are people sending in for questions? Any themes?
We'll get questions about COVID vaccine boosters. We'll get questions about cancer screening. We'll get questions about allergies and asthma, especially now that it's the fall and those fall-time allergies are starting to flare up. Lots of questions about kind of chronic health issues with diabetes and COPD and kind of really anything.
Really anything.
Chest pain,
yeah.
A stroke. Yeah, so it literally is. When we say ask anything, we mean it. Ask anything.
Yeah. What that tells me, and I don't know if you would come to the same conclusion, but instead of people like following something that might be in the news, they really are calling about their personal lives. So if you yeah. noticed a huge trend and everyone was asking you about vaccinations in light of changes at the CDC, then you would know that people were responding based on like, hey, this is what we're seeing in the culture or in the media. But if they're asking about literally anything, then you really hit that sweet spot of trusted advice that they're calling yeah. about their personal lives. That's what I'm taking away from that. How about you?
Definitely. We do see a lot of people saying, you know, my spouse was diagnosed with X, Y, or Z,
yeah.
or I dealt with this issue. And hearing them really asking personal questions about things that they're worried about. And the beauty of it is it's completely anonymous.
Yeah.
So we don't keep track of anything. We don't store your questions. We don't keep track of who asked what. So it is anonymous. This is the way to ask those things that you might not otherwise feel comfortable asking out loud to, you know, where other people might find out about it. So this is your great way to get those medical questions asked without anyone else knowing.
COVID vaccines are shifting. Do you talk to your pharmacist about that, about whether you should be getting a COVID booster and when, or do you talk to your primary care physician?
Yeah, so definitely I would say either one is appropriate, talking with your pharmacist, talking with your primary care physician. Both should be able to give you those accurate answers for, you know, who qualifies and who would most benefit from getting those COVID boosters. And yes, as yeah. the rules are changing with who qualifies. We definitely, it would be helpful to ask that question of someone who can give you your answer.
Who do you think it's still important for? I mean, who are some of the people that you would say, hey, don't drop off of this COVID vaccination schedule? It's going to be really important for you, broadly speaking.
Basically, there are kind of online little eligibility calculators where you can put in your age and your health issues, and then it will kind of spit out whether you are recommended or not. Or you can talk to your, like I said, primary care provider or pharmacist, and they can help guide you through that.
Yeah. Another topic that is getting a lot of press right now is GLP-1s and weight loss medications, the long-term impact of them. How are you suggesting that, people bring to their doctor questions about those kinds of medications and whether they're right for them?
Yes, that is a very good kind of one-on-one conversation of what are your goals? You know, how much weight do you want to lose? What have you done in the past? What health things are you currently doing? Have you spoken with a dietitian? Have you, what are your other risk factors? And are these medications a good fit for you individually? Because there are. We are seeing the more these medications are being used, the more we're seeing that there are risks and benefits to all medications. So what is your risk ratio and what is your benefit ratio for this medication? And having that conversation with your doctor can help make that decision right for you.
Catch On Call with the Prairie Doc on SDPB TV tonight or on their Facebook and YouTube pages. Prairie Doc Radio airs Sundays right here on SDPB. The On Call with the Prairie Doc program is not affected by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting cuts at this time. There's more in the moment after the break. SDPB's Jackie Hendry is up next with another season preview. You're on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota Focus kicks off its 31st season in September. Host Jackie Hendry joins me in the Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls to preview the season. Welcome back.
Thank you. It feels like it's been a minute.
It has been a minute, and you have been all over the state, and I've been following your travels and your reporting all for upcoming episodes of South Dakota Focus about EMS services. Or tell us a little bit about the project that you've been working on and what the problem is, especially in rural South Dakota.
Right. So as in kind of preparation for the new episodes of South Dakota Focus, our team joined the Dakota Life team in some of those community conversations that they had in different areas around the state. And with Focus, we were kind of asking folks what are the problems in your community and who are the people that are working to solve them? Mm-hmm. And something that came up over and over again in those conversations was our ambulances. Our ambulances need help. Our ambulances are understaffed, overworked, huge response areas. And so in researching that, realized, you know, that was something that had come up in the legislative session, some legislation around hoping to support ambulances. That bill didn't pass, but it inspired an interim study on rural ambulance services. So there's a policy piece to this. And emergency medical services, really nationwide, are facing kind of this critical juncture of the model of the last 50 years is no longer sustainable. Too much has changed, and people are really starting to feel the pressure, and that's true here in South Dakota.
Tell us a little bit who you talked to about that nationwide issue.
So first we're going to hear from Brian Hambeck. He is head of the Spearfish Ambulance Service, and he outlines for us that this really is a nationwide issue.
EMS nationwide is in a death spiral. We just are. Without people, without being able to pay people appropriately, there's no way we can keep our lights on and the doors open. So then what happens? Well, then we go back to the days before an ambulance service and the coroner taking the call. Is that what our public wants? Is that what our public needs? People want an ambulance available, but they don't want to pay for it.
So Jackie, you mentioned this is an issue with a long history. How did we get here?
The interesting thing, I heard some of the history from Maynard Konechny. He's the director of the Kimball Ambulance Service. He's been an EMT. This is his 51st year as an EMT. And he outlines sort of that early history of ambulance services in South Dakota.
Before ambulances were in South Dakota here, basically the ambulance was the local mortician. And he would pick up the patient and maybe do a little patient care. But if they didn't make it, they went right to the morgue. If they made it, they went to the hospital. They finally decided they weren't going to do that anymore. They didn't like the blood and guts in their new hearses. So they told the communities that basically they were all done. And communities just stepped up, begged, borrowed, and stole to get where we are today. But with the way things are today, we can't do that anymore. We need constant funding, and we need support from our state and our nation. So
you said 51st year. That means an aging EMS population.
Mm-hmm.
If someone's been in the job for 51 years.
Yeah, we're finding not only our EMTs and other emergency responders aging, but really the broader population of South Dakota is aging.
Yeah.
And so, you know, Brian Hambick talks about this. With an increasingly aging population, you have more and more folks who are calling for help who are either Medicaid or Medicare. Mm. Those programs do not reimburse the full cost to ambulance responders. In a lot of situations, if paramedics or EMTs are responding to someone at home and don't transport that person to the hospital, they may not even see a dime, because under federal programs, they're viewed more as a transportation service and not so much as a medical service. There's a lot of moving parts into the financial strain on emergency medical services. Plus, with, you know, long distances, that's vehicle maintenance, that's fuel. We know those prices are up. Brian Hambick talks about prices for a box of rubber gloves quadrupled during COVID and have not recovered, and those reimbursement rates have not recovered, not to mention what you're paying your first responders, if you're paying them at all.
All right, so how serious is the situation in South Dakota?
It's really reaching a critical moment where particularly policymakers and first responders fear this is truly a life or death situation. We visited with the Mitchell Fire Chief, Dan Polarize. In Mitchell, Davison and Hanson counties recently held a special election to create a tax district to support their ambulance service, because the Mitchell City Service would respond outside of Mitchell City limits, but they were at capacity. They couldn't continue to do it. So they either needed to stop that service to those rural communities or find a tax base to support the ambulance service. They successfully did that. That's a fairly noteworthy thing that the local community was able to accomplish. But here, Chief Polarize is saying this worked for them, but this is still a problem in a broad swath of the state.
Carthage is just up the road, and they made national news saying, if we don't get help, we're shutting the doors. Lyman County said, if we can't get people to take the EMT course and pass the certification, you might not have an ambulance between Chamberlain and Myrtle. You know, I mean, it's unthinkable. The vast majority of what we do, 87% of what we do out of this building, is EMS. It's not fire. We've done a good job on the fire side of putting ourselves out of business. We educate people all the time on fire prevention, and there's codes that people have to follow. We do inspections in the fire service. On the EMS side, I can't make you any healthier. I can't decide what you get to eat. I can't tell you to put your phone down and don't text while you're driving 80 miles an hour down interstate. I can't do those things. We can only respond to them.
So Jackie, you've been working on this for a while, and it's hard to keep up with how fast it's changing and how the problems are being presented afresh and responses in different communities. How is the issue evolving really as we speak?
What we're waiting on now is the third and final meeting of the Legislative Emergency Medical Services Interim Committee. So they have, this will be their third meeting towards the end of October, will be when the committee comes together to really think about what are their recommendations, maybe some potential legislative solutions that they bring to the upcoming legislative session. Representative Eric Emery was the one who brought a bill hoping to make ambulance services an essential service under state law that would bring some of that tax base to support ambulance services in this last legislative session. Again, that bill did not go through, but it inspired this interim task force. Representative Emery is also a paramedic serving with the Rosebud Ambulance Service. We caught up with him after the second meeting of the interim committee where they were discussing, you know, if not a tax base, what funding can we take from DUI fees, for instance?
Sure.
How can we broaden the training pipeline? Things like this. I kind of asked, you know, what his hopes were for the upcoming meeting, and here's what he said.
There will be some solution that will come from this committee. I think that we have a good group of legislators that are committed to coming up with some answers. Will they solve everything next year in session? Most likely not, but I think this is a good stepping stone to continuing the discussion for years to come to really hone in what we need here in South Dakota.
So you mentioned something here, Jackie, about taxes, and I think there's a few things we need to clear up just so people don't know. Aren't I already paying taxes for ambulance services?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
It depends on where you are. So it's not a given, and that's a really common misconception. Even some first responders don't realize that they're not supported by taxes. So counties in South Dakota, counties are not required by law to provide for an ambulance service. Their state law does provide for a special election should a community or a county decide to go through that process to create a tax district for ambulances. But state law does not require that ambulances be provided for in the same way that fire and law enforcement are provided for. Other situations like Sioux Falls or Mitchell, it might be a city situation. Mm. You may see private ambulance services around the state, and there are a whole lot of volunteer ambulance services around the state as well, nonprofits. Really, every ambulance operates a little bit differently, but they're all facing the same financial strain.
Yeah. You mentioned, challenges with Medicaid payments and rising costs for materials, but are call volumes going down? Or call volumes are going...
Call volumes are going up, and I'm okay. Not... I haven't seen really clear data on exactly why that is. If it's aging population, if it's, you know, more distracted driving, things like this. But even in very rural communities, I'm thinking like Newell in northwestern South Dakota, you know, call volumes increasing by hundreds per year. And if you have, you know, a staff of two or three people covering hundreds upon hundreds of square miles, that's a significant uptick in response.
And how about those volunteers? You met many of them.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a pipeline for new volunteer EMS service providers?
The volunteers we've spoken to are really concerned about who's coming up behind them. This is difficult work. It's physically taxing. Of course, it's mentally taxing. You see really difficult things out there.
Yeah.
You're not
with your neighbors.
With your neighbors, yeah. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
In rural communities, you are all the more likely to know the person that you are responding to. And the monetary compensation isn't necessarily there for that level of commitment. On top of just the hours, holidays, nights, weekends, that sort of thing. It's difficult to entice volunteers to work with that, especially as the call volumes increase.
Yeah.
But that's something we're hoping to get into in the October episode of Focus, is a little bit more into some of the ways we might start to alleviate the limited staffing and that thin pipeline of emergency responders.
Plus, in some ways, you're putting yourself at risk. You're
right.
Lifting.
Mm-hmm.
You're going out on icy roads to a car accident. You,
mm-hmm.
you know, you're doing things that could cause you to need some help or assistance in the future. So you're asking a lot of people to volunteer to do that, especially if, you know, long term. All right. You mentioned legislative session. Any idea that something might come out of a future legislative session, especially after the interim or the study committee?
I am certain we will see something.
Yeah.
It's unlikely it will be what I have heard most desired from first responders, which is to make ambulance services an essential service or do some sort of like a public safety tax, like a 1 cent sales
sure.
tax or anything tax-based. Lawmakers are already saying we have a hard time believing that we would get the buy-in for anything tax-related on a statewide scale.
Yeah.
Just
nobody wants
of,
to raise your taxes.
No
in
one
South
wants
Dakota.
To raise your taxes, even if it's for, you know, potentially life-saving services.
That's South Dakota Focus host Jackie Hendry. Season 31 premieres on September 25th at 8 p.m. Central on SDPB. After the break, we'll check in with SDPB Executive Director Julie Overgaard for an update on public broadcasting locally. You're in the moment on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. The future of public broadcasting is changing daily. I sat down with SDPB's Executive Director Julie Overgaard for an update on local public media. A note to listeners, when SDPB is in the news, we cover the story with the same editorial and ethical standards we bring to other interviews. We rely on our executive producer, SDPB's Kara Hetland, for editorial guidance. Things are moving fast, and yet I'm going to ask you questions that you might not have the answers to because they're not moving fast in some ways. So let's start with an update. You have announced the layoff plan for SDPB at a press conference. It got a lot of coverage. And then immediately after that, Ryan Howlett from the Friends of SDPB announced the Bison campaign. And a lot of people in the press were asking, like, oh, those two things are together. How are they connected? Help people understand where you're at right now with SDPB going forward with the rescission of the funding, especially as it intersects with the Bison campaign.
Well, I think like a lot of other public broadcasting stations around the country, we were all hoping, right, that the rescission package wouldn't pass, that it wouldn't go through. And, you know, the day it did, the night it did, I was on the phone with people from CPB and our APTS, the public television lobbying group, and the lobbying folks from NPR, still feeling like there was some hope. And then it just collapsed. And so that was Thursday night. And, you know, as I think Ryan indicated in the interview you did with him today, by Monday we were having these conversations, at least at that point, about what's our triage plan going to be? What are we going to do to try to prevent the worst of the worst from happening? You know, I don't want to be one of those stations that just puts a "we're closed" sign on the door come October 1st. Yeah. And so those conversations started happening immediately. And then around that, conversations around what's the hard reset going to look like for us, because I don't think what a lot of people understood was the rescission was clawing back already approved funding. So we had banked on that $2.3 million being part of our budget for this fiscal year, starting July 1st and ending next June 30th. So the first thing I had to do, is figure out what are we going to do, what are we going to have to do to balance ourselves out so we can actually make it through this fiscal year. And then the second question is, well, then what do we look like after that?
Yeah. Worst of the worst. This is a big question that was happening. Worst of the worst, you put a fork, you know, "we're closed" sign up. What happens to the towers? What happens to does it get taken over? Does it get sold, the signal? Help us understand how those licensing things work if there was a worst of the worst scenario.
That is a really complicated question, because public broadcasting licenses, public broadcasting spectrum, isn't the same thing as commercial. So we can't just go sell it to somebody else or make a profit or do that. If we're not on the air on radio, we can't just put a beep tone up, and the state can't just keep the radio spectrum for public safety or for whatever usage it wants. You have to put some programming on your air. And so you have about a year before you have to forfeit your licenses back to the FCC.
And what does the FCC do with forfeited licenses?
Well, if you noticed, which I did in the Big Beautiful Bill, there was money on the revenue side put in from spectrum resale. And my feeling is that there has been some thought, some design, that public broadcasting stations around the country will fail, forfeit their spectrum, and then it can be resold or changed into commercial or sold to telecommunications phone company, et cetera.
Yeah, so the FCC would make those decisions, or the federal government would make those decisions.
Correct.
That is the worst of the worst.
Yes.
Are we, and in South Dakota, are we near that?
No, we are not near that. I mean, the challenge that I have, the challenge that we have right now as an organization is if our budget was $10 million or $11 million, as everybody has known it with the programming and the services we provide, you know, is it now going to be forever $8 million or is it going to be $9 million? What is the new normal look like? And how does the fact that all of our funding, primarily going forward, is going to come from two sources, the state of South Dakota, the taxpayers of South Dakota, and the dollars that Friends of SDPB generates? And so we've always been this three-legged stool because we had that CPB funding. And so it served as bridge funding, or we could carry some of it over. And it was just a little, at times it was a cushion. And now we're not going to have that cushion. You know, we're going to have general funds and the dollars we raise. Well, in a downturn economy, maybe Friends doesn't raise as much. Or in difficult state times, maybe we have an across-the-board state cut. I mean, I think it just creates a whole nother level of stress and uncertainty for SDPB and others, quite frankly, like us in the state. But I don't think that that means in any way, shape, or form that we're putting a close sign on the door. I don't think that at all. We really are working very hard to try to keep our statewide system, our towers, our infrastructure together and not have to tell somebody in Faith, South Dakota or Aberdeen or Winter that we're taking their public television or the public radio away from them.
Yeah. So help people who maybe weren't tuned into the press conference understand how you made triage decisions, what you kept, and what have been some of the hard decisions that you're letting go.
I mean, unfortunately, a lot of our Corporation for Public Broadcasting dollars paid for local content, and we're not going to have that. Certainly, when I think about all of the conversations I've had through my career and most recently this past session with legislators and administrative officials here in South Dakota, they do put value on our collective reach and our infrastructure as it relates to the tasks we have to perform and are relied upon by many when it comes to public safety and emergency information. And so, like I said a minute ago, we really didn't want to see our footprint shrink. We didn't want to say to the most rural and vulnerable of our citizens, because you live in a small, unpopulated county or area, you don't get public broadcasting anymore. So that was really thing one. The other thing that we're really trying to figure out a way to salvage is the role and the work we do in open government, government transparency, by providing, you know, live access to the legislature when they're in session, when they have their special session to talk about the prison, that everybody has access to those things as they're happening in unedited real-time form. I don't think we're going to be able to continue to do it exactly the way we have been doing it, because some of the people we've laid off were integral to that work. So we're working through now new workflows and trying to move that around so we can still meet our responsibilities as best we can, but it won't be in the same way we've always done it. And so that is a little TBD at the moment in terms of what it's ultimately going to look like. But I have told those in the administration and in the legislature who've asked, you know, that at least for this session, this upcoming session, we're going to do everything we can to hold the line on that.
Yeah.
And then our high school athletics coverage and fine arts and the work we do with our youth in this state is another priority.
Yeah, and these are priorities set by the governor's office, set by the board, set by the SDPB executive team.
Set in conjunction with the board and the SDPB executive team, understanding a lot of the feedback that we've gotten in terms of why does the administration, why does the legislature, why did they approve $5.5 million for us last year? That's largely why.
Yeah.
Also, I would say on the losses or the things when it comes to journalism and the work we do there and public affairs and some of the things that we've shrunk, or in the education case at least have, you know, are going to eliminate potentially. These were not easy decisions. You know, I was the champion of reinvigorating our K-12 and pre-K work when we did our strategic planning in 2018 and went and fought to get the position to lead and do that work. And building out our Sioux Falls and Rapid City studios and our boutique studios was all about increasing access and to people, to interviews, to stories, to try to do whatever we could do so that when the average South Dakotan is listening to SDPB, listening to In the Moment, listening to a news story, that they do feel a sense of place, and the place is not always Sioux Falls and Rapid City, but South Dakota, all around our state.
Yeah. Some of those things are going away. In the Moment is probably going away. You know, we're all waiting to see if some of these layoffs will be rescinded. But we have been told that In the Moment is going away. The education team has been told that they will face layoffs as of October 31st. I want to go back with you, like I went back with Ryan Hollett, about the Sound Vision campaign and just the long list of successes and the way that that was being built out really in 2021. For, you know, increased early learning initiative, for business and economic development reporting and diversity reporting, and the boutique studios, which, again, if there's no one to connect to, those are largely studios that people were connecting with through In the Moment. Perhaps other people throughout SDPB were also using them, but I know we use them frequently on the show. Those sit empty now, and a lot of those successes are kind of going away now. Help me understand how you looked at that strategic plan and the successes of Sound Vision, and how do you do a hard reset now that much of those successes have to be at least put on pause?
Well, it's personally and professionally heartbreaking, and certainly nothing that we envisioned or talked about. You know, when we were talking about strengths and weaknesses and those kinds of things and fears, you know, the total loss of federal funding was not part of our conversation or part of our what-if scenario. If you would have asked me back in 2016 or even in 2021, the likelihood of what happened recently happening, I just would have said that's ridiculous. You know, that's not going to happen because it's not just South Dakota. It's all these rural stations across the country who really relied on that funding for basic information to their publics. And I just find it unconscionable in some respects that we're even in this situation, but yet nonetheless, here we are. So it doesn't diminish my, or I think others, belief in the work we're doing or belief in the importance of public media and the need for South Dakotans to have access to good quality journalism, news, information, and public affairs, or our intent that we are going to continue to provide them in some form or fashion. It's just going to be less. The other thing I would say is these things, to me, are increasingly going to have to be the responsibility of we the people of South Dakota. And people are really going to have to maybe re-engineer their thinking a little bit to understand that public media and the word public in public media requires not just their listening ear or their watching eyeballs, but their active participation and their active support. If we want these things, we are going to have to stand up and help make them possible through our words, our deeds, our actions, and our pocketbooks.
Yeah. Do you think there are political consequences, because thousands of people have written to their congressional delegation and have been dumbfounded. And I heard again and again from people who said to me, I wrote a letter, I wrote another letter, they're not even responding to me. Do you think that that has a fallout for people who are running for office in the state? Not that just SDPB does, because there are certainly other organizations that are facing the same kind of challenges. In your experience politically of doing this job for a few decades, how long of a tail does it have?
I have to believe it has a tail. But in my decades of doing this, I don't ever recall another political time quite like the one we're in right now. Yeah. I'm not sure that I know what the ultimate end game is. And I scratch my head sometimes because I do understand the conservative viewpoint about not spending more money than you have, or not increasing the deficit, or any of those things, you know, growing up in the 80s as a Reagan Republican, these are not new talking points. But yet, public broadcasting as a system, the money that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting was getting was $550 million. That has gone up by $50 million in the last decade. So to say that public broadcasting had to be cut because of bloating or all this extra money we were given during the pandemic or whatever some of the arguments I've heard was simply not true. Public broadcasting, just like South Dakota Public Broadcasting, fought hard for every dime of increase that we ever got. Mm. And there was never a year of, hey, let's give them another $100 million. So we were largely operating on the same dollars we had been operating on, a decade prior to that. SDPB has never been flush with cash from the state coffers. Mm. You know, we as a system have made do, and I think in case of SDPB, done a really good job of building up our fundraising capacity and really trying to do what we could on our own with the best of intentions of not putting all the responsibility for paying for us on the back of the taxpayer. But as it relates to our congressional delegation, who relies on our services when they come back to town to communicate with their constituencies, mm-hmm. And who I always felt had an appreciation, respect, and love for the work that we do here. But I think everybody's caught up in D.C. and heading down a train track that they're not going to budge off of, at least not in the short term, for fear of losing their office in the next election. Now, whether or not the loss of funding for public broadcasting here or other program services that have been cut will be enough to impact a future race, time will tell. We will see what happens in the midterms and beyond.
Yeah. What's the future look like? Music funding, music rights, some of the collaborative things that the stations across the nation did together to save money. Jazz Nightly still is going to continue on SDPB, but that can only continue with rights
right.
to play the music that Carl Gerke plays on Jazz Nightly. What's the outlook for music rights, for example?
So that question is being asked a lot in all of the national meetings I am part of, and we get told repeatedly that PBS, NPR, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting are working on resolving these things right now and trying to extend music rights to buy us at least a couple of years. But I think there's just a lot of juggling and jockeying going on. PBS, to my knowledge, has enough interconnection money, and by interconnection money, I mean the dollars to feed Masterpiece Theater or the national schedule to places like South Dakota, that they have that funding in place for the next number of years. NPR right now does not. So there's questions about Morning Edition and All Things Considered and all the shows we get nationally where the funding to feed them to local places like SDPB is going to come from. That's still being worked out and is a big question mark. Music rights might be extended for a year, but then what happens after that? A lot of our rating services, because they're very expensive to kind of know who your TV or your radio audience is, was subsidized by CPB. Will those things continue? We don't know. And then certainly they were providing a lot of direct funding to stations for key series, for key children's programming. And some of those questions, I think, are going to be out there in terms of where the sustainability for some of our marquee national signature programs will come from. Mm. But just like us, they have had no more time than we have had to figure out all these big questions. And come October 1st, they will be down to a skeleton staff at CPB just winding down operations. So they really have the month of September to answer all these questions on behalf of the system writ large.
Answer to people why we can't just fill, like if Morning Edition goes away, why you can't just fill it with 4 hours of In the Moment or 4 hours of local programming. What makes that a difficult solution or an impossible solution?
It's a difficult solution because local programming costs more than purchasing national programming.
Because of scale.
If we spend $300,000 a year on Morning Edition, All Things Considered, pick your other national shows, mm-hmm. right? We spend 2 to 3 times that much for In the Moment, for local news, for Jazz Nightly, just because local programming takes real people. And, you know, you can't do In the Moment by yourself. You need Ari and Ellen to help you produce the show. Mm-hmm. And then from sometime, I'm sure there's other engineers and others who help. By the time you factor in all of those things, it's, you know, it's more than that national buy. And if that's true in radio, I think we can have a little more flexibility on the radio side because it's not video. Mm-hmm. So I do intend and want to have these conversations about, is there a way on SCPB radio, looking at our entirety of our schedule, to actually bring more local content or more local music or more local art? Is there a way through partnerships or volunteerism or some means that we can address some of the concerns that I've heard, that we hear about bias or too much national, and is there ways we can do that? I think that's going to be easier to accomplish on the radio side than it is on the television side, just because TV costs more to produce.
Yeah.
So I think there's going to be a lot of hard conversations like that happening around the country. We're just in a little different situation here in South Dakota that we are both a TV and a radio station.
Right.
And right now, I would partially consider it a luxury if you only had to worry about one or the other and not both at the same time.
Which brings us back to strategic planning. Mm-hmm. Once you go through the layoffs, October 31st comes, you're shutting down certain programs, figuring out, I don't know if there's a plan on what will replace In the Moment during their time frame. So once some of those decisions are made, what's next? How do you shift into the next phase of strategic planning once you get past triage?
Right. So once we get past triage, we have to take a breath and we have to refocus. And we have to try to, I think, ask ourselves what's our new budget target that we feel comfortable that we're going to have in FY27 to spend on people and programming and things. And once we have that number set that everybody feels comfortable with it, then we got to start working backwards and going, okay, we no longer have CPB to pay our PBS membership dues for programming, our NPR dues for programming. So we're going to have to pick those up ourselves, minus whatever reductions we can make on that front. And then we've got to engineer the network and make sure a tower doesn't fall over and that people still have their signal in a blizzard or a flood. And so what's that going to take for us to do that? And pretty much then the question is, okay, here's the rest of the money we have. That's for all the local programming we want to do for the year, television, radio, digital, wherever it might be. And whatever our priority is going to be in that regard, what do we think we can sustain? And leaving ourselves enough time that once we put the strategic plan together that we could at least have the opportunity to approach certain foundations, major donors, et cetera, and sell them the concept and the idea over the long term. I don't think major donors and major foundations want to just write us out a check just to get us to June 31st, and then we're doing this all over again. Right. It behooves us, as painful as it is, to really ask ourselves what the priorities are, what we can afford, and lay out that plan for long-term sustainability so that we can sell it to the people who can actually help us implement it.
What have you learned from the people who have been stepping up and writing checks, whether it's that $5 check or a $10,000 check? What are they saying they value about SDPB? What are you hearing from them?
Well, I've certainly heard that they love you. I have heard that. No, I've heard just with profound sincerity the value they place on the work we do. Mm-hmm. And which is sad but heartening, you know, we can talk a lot about the changes we've made and the things we've done internally to improve ourselves, to be better, to be more responsive, or, you know, be more local. But the validation is all in what the people tell you. And I remember at the front of the Bison campaign thinking to myself, Well, either people are going to believe in what we do and all the work we have done is going to pay off, or people are going to be responsive, or they're going to say, yeah, it really wasn't that important to me, and they're going to walk away. And so in the depths of my despair, it has been the people of this amazing state who have stood up and cheered us on and said they still believe in us and they believe in the important work we do and that you do and your team does and all the public affairs and just everything we do. That I have faith. I have faith that, you know, we're not going to ever be what we were 2 months ago, but we will be something new and something different. But that doesn't necessarily mean we won't still be good, or that in our difference we can't make good things happen out of it, because that's what we do, Lori. That's what we've always done.
Yeah. Anything else I didn't ask you? Any misperceptions that people have that you want to clear up? Anything from our conversation with Ryan Hallett that you think that, you know, he couldn't answer because that was a question that's best saved for you?
The only thing I would say is I really am encouraged by the outpouring of support that we've seen from South Dakotans and from foundations and individuals. And I have real optimism and real confidence that we are going to be able to claw back some of our layoffs, that we are going to be able to keep some of our key programming, maybe delivered in a slightly different way, maybe not quite the way it was before, but that we will be able to climb this hill and come down the other side of it, still with the core things that we really need to do and provide to be a viable, vibrant organization. And I'm also really hopeful that it's going to lead to some new partnerships and some new ways of doing our business that maybe should have always happened or could have or would have happened, but maybe wouldn't have if not for this unfortunate situation we find ourselves in. So even out of darkness can come some light.
Yeah. How are you holding up as a leader? This is a real leadership challenge for you. What sustains you during this time? Other than the support that you're getting from people that you just mentioned, this is when you go home at night.
I mean, without question, this has been the most difficult, stressful, horrible, you know, time of my career. Not that I haven't laid off people before, but this is extreme, and this is uncharted even for, you know, myself, a 30-year veteran of this business. But as a 30-year veteran of this business and somebody who's seen maybe the longer tail of the difference we make, mm-hmm. and has that viewpoint that's not just a couple years old and into this, but really the arc of the impact of public broadcasting. So you're talking to people who were influenced by SDPB as a kid, watching Sesame Street or Mr. Rogers, who now are the people listening to In the Moment or calling their legislators or wanting to talk to me, you know, about the latest Masterpiece Theater series and whether I enjoyed that as much as they did, or some story we did on, you know, during Morning Edition. It's a lifelong connection and lifelong friendships that people have made with us. And I consider that an honor and a gift and a treasure. And so when I'm feeling down or feeling like giving up, you know, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of people who have been impacted by the work that you and we have all done over these years, whose lives are forever made better by it, or who have been helped out in an emergency because of it. And so we owe it to them to not give up.
Julie Overgaard, thank you so much for not giving up, and thanks for spending time with us today.
You're welcome.
That was SDPB's Executive Director, Julie Overgaard, and that is our show for today. We hope that it served you. In the Moment is produced by Ari Youngeman and Ellen Kester. I'm Lori Walsh. From all of us here at SDPB, thank you for listening.